Hey, that will do. Thank you. And my seatmates will thank you also.
House Committee on Energy and Environment will come to order. Colleagues, we have two things on our agenda today, and we will start by opening an informational meeting on House Bill, the report back from the appraisers from House Bill 2801, which this committee may recall from last session, included a section requesting that appraisers return to this body to talk about how we can improve the appraisal of energy efficiency upgrades in residences. So go ahead and open that informational hearing and call up Galen Cooper, please.
Thanks. Good afternoon. Chair Bailey and members of the committee, my name is Galen Cooper. I'm the interim administrator for the Appraiser Certification and Licensure Board, or otherwise known as ACLB. In addition to licensing-related activities, the ACLB is responsible for reviewing and approving courses, providers, and educational programs for appraisers, both for qualifications, for initial licensing, and for continuing education for license certification renewals. For appraisal continuing education, each state must implement the minimum national standards that is set by the Appraiser Qualification Board, which is otherwise known as AQB. For the 2015 Real Property Appraiser Qualification Criteria, the Property Appraiser Qualification Board has identified the continuing education topic, valuation of green buildings. For pre-licensing, the Appraiser Qualification Board criteria for 2015 will require that four appraiser education core curriculum courses will include instruction on the valuation of energy-efficient equipment. All Oregon appraiser applicants are required to take the National Appraiser Qualification Board appraiser licensing examination. That will include questions on this subject as well. The approved courses for continuing education covers a broad range for topics including green buildings and energy efficiency. The ACLB currently has approved green and/or energy conservation and efficiency courses offered by proprietary schools such as SEC Solutions, the Appraisal Institute, McKissick, and the Earth Advantage Institute. The ACLB has a list of approved courses that are available on our website for appraisers to find. Some of these proprietary schools are offering a green certification and designation. Earth Advantage Institute currently offers a three-day course where the participants will earn the accredited green appraiser, which is called AGA designation. Earth Advantage also is in the process of finalizing with the ACLB course approval for a sustainable homes professional designation. We're working together to get that established. It's a program that will include 84 hours of instructions. In order to keep the designation, the appraiser will need to complete continuing education. Earth Advantage will be offering a database that contains names of the appraisers who have completed and has earned the accredited green certification and or designations. SEC Solutions will be offering a database of Oregon appraisers who have completed one of their green appraisal courses and who has identified them as competent and is interested in taking assignments for this property type. Again, this database will be available for all those people who are interested in finding an appraiser who is qualified and competent to appraise that type of property. The growing supply of green home presents new business opportunities to appraisers, and as the demand increases for appraising green homes, more appraisers are expected to meet the market demand. These appraisers must process the necessary skills and tools to produce a credible appraisal. However, with specialization in any professional field, not all appraisers will choose to value green homes. Some licensees appraise only commercial and or industrial property. So if you have an appraiser that specializes in commercial property, he might be just, his specialty might be appraising motels and just motels in commercial property. Or it might be that they might be just specializing in gas stations. Others only appraise rural property, and still others only perform relocation appraisals. The ACLB issues credentials signifying that the holder of the credential has met the national minimum requirements set forth by the Appraiser Qualification Board. The ACLB is unable to determine the competency of an appraiser to perform an appraisal on every particular type of property. Appraisers who are not qualified to appraise green homes are required by the Uniform Standards of Professional Appraisal Practice, which is USPAP, competency rule, to decline or withdraw from these types of appraisal assignments until they do acquire the necessary competency. Thus, the board believes that certification of competency of appraisers who value property with energy-efficient features could be misleading to the public, as well as expose the state to liability. Based on review of various industry resources, the board concludes that existing organizations and entities active in the green or building energy efficiency arena are well positioned to continue to develop meaningful databases and continuing education programs to meet the needs of the various industry participants, including licensed and certified appraisers. ACLB staff includes an interim administrator, which is myself, a temporary receptionist, a half-time fiscal analyst, two administrative specialists, and a vacant position for a compliance specialist, too. The small number of staff is already tasked with a number of important responsibilities. The board believes that rather than devote staff time and limited resources to initiate a program to compete with the proprietary schools who are in a far better position to address the specialty area, resources would be better spent on efforts to monitor and evaluate the continuing educational courses and curriculum of public and private institutional providers. On the local level, I have actively sought to network with various agencies and organizations involved in energy conservation and energy-efficient buildings. I recently attended and participated in the Oregon Real Estate Transaction Stakeholder Meeting, where various businesses and organizations came together to share their 2014 plans, goals, and opportunities, and to collaborate in educating real estate brokers, lenders, appraisers, builders, and consumers on energy efficiency and green homes. Participating in these types of networking activities will continue to enable the ACLB to improve its awareness of programs and educational offerings that are developed and to better enable the ACLB to serve as a resource to appraisers interested in improving their competency in the specialty area. The board will continue to monitor and evaluate its continuing education curriculum and to ensure that courses on valuing green homes are available to appraisers. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony, and thanks for putting in the work to do this evaluation. There are questions for this witness. Vice Chair Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With this increased level of continuing ed that's required of appraisers and so forth, is there any commensurate increase in their fees to consumers as they go out and do the appraisals in the field?
I have not heard of any increase in fees. No.
Okay.
I apologize.
Follow up. As these appraisals are determined and as a green value is incorporated into the appraisal, is there ever any determination or evaluation of whether the green value actually compares to real market value to make sure that there's, if we're going to describe a higher value sales price, assessed value to a property, that there's a direct collect correlation with the reality what real market value is as well, to make sure that we're not inflating something over here because of X number of bells and whistles that it may have that doesn't correspond with what the market's willing to bear over here.
Mm-hmm. Chair Bailey and Vice Chair Johnson, I'm not able to answer that question. I'm not an appraiser myself. This is all new to me, and but our goal is to, again, it's all new to us, and so we are going to be looking further into it.
If it's possible, if you might be able to refer us to somebody who might know that answer, be able to come, get back to the committee with that answer, that would be, I think, very helpful for the committee.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Widener.
I could just follow up, since we're getting information back, kind of to follow up on what Vice Chair Johnson was saying. It would also be kind of nice to know what that increased value, when they do an energy audit, which I kind of think the consumer, if you're buying a home, should be able to make that choice if they want to have that extra added appraisal to it. But how much it costs to do the energy audit on the home and then return on investment, because they might be saving $30 a month and they pay $600 extra to have that energy audit. That's good information to have up front for the consumers.
That, Representative, that may be information we may be able to get already from the Department of Energy, and we'll see if we can get that. I think the appraisers probably may not have a direct connection to the to energy audits that are done on the building, but we can certainly follow up and see if we can get that information.
Thank you.
Do you happen to know what percent of appraisers are certified with an AGA certification or have gone through these programs?
Chair Bailey, it just started,
mm-hmm.
And it's a very small percentage at this point.
Okay.
And I'm going to just say, just within the last year, they've developed the courses, and not all of the appraisers were able to take the course all at one time. How it's being developed is that they can do so many hours per year, and so it could be 2 to 3 years before they actually get that designation. But once they get that, then it's something that they're looking into, asking that in order to keep that designation, that they do continuing education pertaining to the subject.
Thank you. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what is it that would drive them to want the certification? What is the prompt that would make them take the 10 days course, or do they get paid more money for doing this, or who is it that's asking them for this kind of analysis?
Chair Bailey, Representative Benz, it's the future. And I think that it's just a very it's a new concept that's going out there. I think that builders and different consumers are starting to get in there, and I think it's just a new pocket of a business that will be opening up for them.
Thank you.
No further questions. We appreciate your time.
Thank you
for putting this together.
Thank you.
Close the informational meeting on the update on House Bill 2801 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1578. And Rick, if you could describe it to us, and while he's doing so, Senator Knope, would you care to join us, please?
Thank you, Chair. You do have Senate Bill 1578 before you. This adds woody biomass and other renewable energy technology identified by rule by the Department of Energy as fuel for space or water heating or to generate electricity to the definition of green energy technology. It also specifies that green energy technologies located away from a site of the public building may not replace or constitute purchase and use of energy generated from woody biomass or another renewable energy technology that existed on the date of the original building permit for the public building was issued. You do have before you the -A9 amendments, and what these do is it does remove the definition of green energy technology that woody biomass as a fuel can be used to generate electricity, so it does eliminate the electric generation. And it also removes the rulemaking ability of the Department of Energy to identify other renewable energy technologies just under green energy technology. Thank you, Chair.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm State Senator Tim Canope from District 27, which includes Redmond, Tumalo, Bend, and Sun River. And this idea was brought to me by constituents who were concerned about their ability, basically, to be as efficient and effective with public dollars as possible. And we have several new buildings that are going up at the end of this year, this summer, and then next year. And not every building is able to accomplish what they want to with green energy, with just solar, or with just geothermal. In some areas of the state, biomass is a kind of a preferred method to save money. And that essentially what this bill does is it's going to create jobs. It's going to save money on heating and fuel costs in schools and other public buildings. And it's going to reduce carbon emissions because where we live, the trees are, if you treat the forest, you're going to have leftover, and you're either going to burn it or you're going to process it somehow and use it. And by allowing biomass with obviously supplies close by, it allows us to be more efficient and effective with essentially with public funds for these buildings. It also recirculates dollars in our communities, and that creates jobs in this industry. And I really have felt in fact, in 2012, when I was attempting to enter this body, I really believe that we need to have a focus on creating jobs that I think will improve our environment. At the same time, we're creating income taxes for the state because, as we all know, the more jobs you create, the more income taxes get paid by those folks who have the job. So I would encourage you to take up this bill. I am fine with the Dash 9 amendments. I think there's some good things in there, and would look favorably on those being included in this bill as well. And with that, happy to answer any questions I can. I know there's other people who can testify who are a whole lot more versed in the subject and do it for a living and have done it in the field and have been very successful at it.
Seeing no questions, Senator, I just have one brief question for you. In your opinion, biomass thermal, would that include the using the heat from cogeneration to produce hot water? My reading is that it would.
And I think I would agree with that.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Senator. Just want to get that on the record. Thank you. We'll call up Tony DeBone. Excuse me. Not here yet. Okay, got it. Let's see. Okay. Mark Kendall, Amanda Rich, and Andrew Hayden, please.
Chair Bailey, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. I'm Mark Kendall. I'm principal of Kendall Energy Consulting, and I'm here representing my firm and clients in the wood products industry. And I've been in the energy efficiency and renewable resource industry in Oregon for 35 years. And although I do not work in the commercial and small-scale biomass thermal business, this bill is directed towards. I am in full support of Senate Bill 1578 as amended. It provides public entities choice for appropriate siting and appropriate use of resources. As you heard from the Senator earlier, some sites are just simply better suited to a variety. And so this isn't about either or. This is about providing choice. And choice for appropriate design. You may hear that this bill was initially targeted to the solar marketplace, and they're concerned about dilution or distraction. Over the years, since 2010, the price of solar has dropped from $10 a watt to $6 a watt in 2012, and in 2013, all evidence is it's continued on that slope. And so solar industry is getting a larger renewable capacity share of this 1.5% marketplace, if you will. So certainly direct geothermal is an option in communities where that is ideally suited, and they should as well have that choice and under this legislation can exercise it. The systems are reliable and proven. The Oregon Department of Energy has ushered in the last couple of years a number of these systems and has the technical expertise to be the go-to resource for municipalities, so that this will be a well and responsibly and reliably developed industry in Oregon, and our contractors are experts that are sought out regionally and in travel because of their expertise that they got here through the programs that we've had in the past. So it supports a growing geographically distributed new renewable resource that's burgeoning, that provides a critical opportunity for us to develop distributed markets for these fire risk reduction treatment materials and residues. So Chair Bailey and members of the committee, I support passage of this bill, and I encourage your support. And it's a decision to offer municipalities a planning choice.
Thank you.
Okay. Chair Bailey and members of the committee, thanks for inviting me to, or thanks for hearing me today. I'm Andrew Hayden. I'm with Wisewood Incorporated in Portland, Oregon. We're a project development, design, and construction company. We live and work in Portland, but we work a lot. Our office is in Portland, but we work quite a bit out in the rural regions of the state, in eastern Oregon especially. I'm here to express support for the bill as amended. I wanted to tell a little story, just a short story, of why this bill is important to me, and I think important to Oregon. I'm going to use an example from a project that involves the Oregon Department of Forestry, and I want to call them out for their great leadership that they've shown on this bill and also for the entire industry. It's more of an example that kind of highlights some of the issues that this bill would specifically solve. And it basically involves a project that I was involved with when I was working on the construction of the Malheur Pellet Mill out in John Day, Oregon. I was approached by the architects and engineers of an ODF project, which would be the new Oregon Department of Forestry building in John Day. And when they approached me, the project was 95% design complete and ready for bid, and they asked if they could do biomass. And it simply was too far along in their process to integrate biomass into the project, and actually could have been integrated really well. What happened was, in the end, they went with propane. They went with propane furnaces, and so now there's a new, brand new Oregon Department of Forestry building in John Day that's burning propane, 2 miles away from the John Day pellet mill, and you know, it caused a lot of ire in the community, and to this day it causes ire that didn't go the other way, and this bill would specifically create the kind of opportunities in the process when a new building is going up or being designed where they would say, oh, biomass on the list, you know, let's take a look at this, call some consultants, see what we can do, and have it be part of the choice. And if they are in a town like John Day where the biomass is such the dominant resource for them, you know, this would be an easy thing for them to do, and it would be a win-win for everybody. And so instead of, you know, that money directly supporting jobs in John Day, the money is going to propane, which is about a 10% margin for the local guy, 90% goes out. So that's really the story that kind of got me excited about this bill, and I hope you guys will consider to support the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good
Good afternoon, Chair Bailey, members of the committee. My name is Amanda Rich, and I am with the Nature Conservancy. Here in Oregon and, frankly, nationally, the Nature Conservancy has made the restoration of America's forests a top priority. By one count, we have in Oregon over 5 million acres of fire-prone forests that are at risk of large, uncharacteristic wildfire and in need of active management. At the same time, as we all know, painfully, our rural communities adjacent to these forests are suffering double-digit unemployment and escalating poverty rates. By increasing the pace and scale of forest health restoration, we achieve a triple win of ecological, social, and economic benefits. We create and sustain jobs in the woods, maintain our critical mill infrastructure, and support other businesses that rely upon a strong wood products industry. We get all that. And we get healthy, resilient forests that are resistant to disease and fire and, frankly, do a better job of sequestering carbon than the current overstocked and disease-prone forests that we have today. So why am I here today supporting Senate Bill 1578? Because Senate Bill 1578 does a small but critical piece, component of helping to increase federal or all forest health restoration and active management. Restoration produces that byproduct that you heard of before, and it produces that residual. And by creating sustainable markets for that residual, we can reduce the cost of treatments and increase the number of acres that we can treat. Right now, we're not keeping up in terms of fire return interval and in terms of disease and overstocking that needs to be dealt with. And any little bit that we can do to help increase the pace and scale of forest health restoration is a good bit. And we think that this bill, again, opens a small door to helping to create a sustainable market for residuals of restoration. And we hope that you would support it. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question, I guess, is the balancing between solar, which is what's enjoyed this bill's impact, I think, probably the most, on the one hand, and biomass on the other.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds as if there are five or six positives that would flow from biomass being added to this mix. The one that's of greatest interest to me is the acceleration, if you will, of the treatment of the forest, which is, for those of us who have been exposed to that concept, something we understand, but others may not, so you might want to expand upon that a bit and explain why that's so valuable to areas out in my part of the world, millions of acres, basically, and why, if you go back to the original concept underlying the bill, it was to have solar, which would reduce carbon creation. And yet the biomass concept here is to sequester carbon, so we're getting to the same place. But we need to measure the comparative feature. I don't know if you have that yet or not, and that's really my question.
Okay. Chair Bailey, Representative Benz, thank you for the question. I will do my best to answer it. I'm not a scientist, but I can tell you a story from our property that we have in the Klamath area, the Sycan Marsh property. When we bought the property, it was overstocked and had about 1,500 trees per acre. And now this is a type of forest ecology that really should be at about 60 to 75 trees per acre. And historical records show that that is what a healthy forest in that region and of that type should look like. So we went about the work of cutting that back cutting the thinning that forest back to that acreage. Within 3 years, the amount of biomass that had been taken out had been completely regained by the large healthy trees that were left behind. So, Representative Bentz, when you talk about increased carbon sequestration, a healthier for an overstocked diseased forest is not a healthy forest that is sequestering carbon in the way that we would like to see it do so. A thinned, disease-resistant forest is a healthier forest, is growing at a greater rate, and is sequestering carbon in the way that we would like to see it do so. I hope that helps.
There's a follow-up, if I may.
Sure.
So as I understand it, the situation in Grant County and John Day, there's a stewardship program that is for, I don't know how many thousands of acres, but it's a bunch. The difficulty is in removing the biomass, that is the trees that need to be thinned, you can't pay the freight. It doesn't pencil unless you add value, the value of the much more efficient forest left after you remove all that stuff. So this particular bill would assist in making that economically feasible. Not very much, but a little. Is that a correct capturing of one of the reasons you're supporting the bill?
Chair Bailey, Representative Bentz, yes, that is a correct capturing. Creating sustainable markets for that significant amount of byproduct that will be created through that the contract that you referred to on the Malheur and others is an important part of, as you say, making these projects pay their way out of the woods.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kendall, you used the phrase, I think, referring to woody biomass and putting it into this portfolio. The benefits would be geographically distributed. I think that's what you referred to throughout. And I'd like just to go a little deeper on that. And Mr. Hayden, you're from the Portland metro area. So could maybe both of you talk about how, in addition to those places out in more rural Oregon, the benefits could also be felt in perhaps the valley, more metro-focused areas, and how could we, in fact, on the west side also be involved in the woody biomass in a way that would, again, produce benefits to our energy system but also provide economically viable job creation too.
Good. As you heard and Representative Bentz mentioned, you know, there is that kind of small local opportunity in these communities where there are markets that need support, like Malheur Lumber's pellet mill, for example, mm-hmm. providing markets for the Malheur National Forest materials. Those kinds of opportunities exist around the state. As to urban applications, one just needs to look about 17,000 miles to the east, and in Europe they have numerous urban applications of pellet boilers that meet all of the emission standards and stringency that you would see here in North America. So where we have, not that we would see a lot of conversion or change or shift to that effect, but the benefits to Oregonians extend to that carbon benefit that was mentioned in sequestration in the healthier forest. But we also find that when you have a market for forest residues, less of it is burned as slash, and that creates carbon emissions. And then we have the pellet or the other prepared fuel that offsets a fossil fuel, which is then an imported commodity that has export cost. And what we can see is that those the cost of and value of reducing carbon over the long term to all constituencies in the state will lower.
I'll just add something on the district energy side about urban, if you want to think about urban opportunities. Quick story, I got started sort of thinking about biomass in about 2002, 2003. I was living over in Sweden, in Stockholm, and I found out that the entire city was heated by biomass, and in a more say half the city. There's basically four boilers that heat the entire city of a million people. Two of them are fired by biomass and two of them do other technologies. But when I asked where the wood was coming from, they said it was wood pellets coming from the west coast of Canada through the Panama Canal being dropped off into Port of Stockholm. So that's, you know, we're kind of new to it here, but around the world it's becoming a mature market with the international trade involved and everything. Seattle is heated partially. The downtown core of Seattle is heated by Seattle steam, which is about half biomass. So it's definitely possible to do in urban areas. Right now, gas prices are low, so it's areas that have propane and oil, primarily rural areas, that have seen the greatest benefit or the earliest, quickest paybacks to convert. But it's not at all inconceivable, and we are looking at projects currently in the Willamette Valley, especially in some wood products manufacturers that would like to convert from gas to biomass. So it's definitely can contribute across the state.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You need a question?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Okay. Just curious, are these burners, I don't know anything about them, are they always, is the fuel always converted to pellets?
No.
Or?
Nope. It can be left as wood chips, mm-hmm. or it can be, dried and ground up further and made into a pellet and then burned in a boiler. The technology to combust the system, to combust the fuel is similar, but generally speaking, the larger the system is, the more likely it is to use wood chips or directly utilize forest residuals.
Mm-hmm.
And the smaller scale for homes, small buildings, would be better off with pellets, generally speaking.
Okay. One more. Could you give me an idea of how efficiently these burn, say, compared to my brand new gas furnace that I had to put in this year after my other one failed?
Well, so currently you probably have a condensing furnace, which might bump you just a little bit over the efficiency of a modern pellet boiler. But a modern pellet boiler is really in the 85 to 87% efficiency. There's a few, you know, globally speaking, there's a few firms working on condensing pellet boilers that would bring you up to 92, 94, 95. Mm-hmm. But right now we say 87 would be sort of the efficiency level of these systems. Okay. 85, 87.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Would torrefaction technology be one of the things that would be acceptable in the woody biomass that you're talking about?
So you can think of torrefaction as sort of an a competing process to like wood pelletizing.
Mm-hmm.
It's another way to process the wood. Certainly, if someone was to put in a burner or a boiler or system that was designed to utilize the torrefied pellets, it would work fine to create heat. There's no problem there. Probably there's more energy, a little more energy in the torrefied pellet than the regular wood pellet. So if you have an existing wood pellet system, you'd want to make some alterations or check with the manufacturer to make sure that that's okay to utilize a torrefied pellet, because it's just a little more densified. It's got more energy left. It's been processed further.
Thank you. Representative Leininger.
Thank you so much for being here today. Before I took this position, I used to serve as a Clackamas County Commissioner, and in Clackamas County there is a very robust nursery industry, and I think that there's a need to do a fair amount of burning at the end of a season. And there's also, pretty significant former, timber sectors that have fallen on challenging times as that economy has transitioned. And I think it's exciting that people are looking at ways that we can use local resources to support generation of new economic development opportunities and modest cost energy opportunities close to where people live and work. And I think there's probably a fair amount that we all are going to continue to learn about this industry as it ripens, but I think this is really promising, and I appreciate the breadth of perspective that's come before us already today, and I think we have more witnesses coming to give their perspectives. But thank you for your work on this. I think it's exciting and important for our state and our economy as a go-forward option.
Mr. Hayden, I would also mention, as you are from Portland, you and your partner, Mr. Berger, doing great work on bringing this to the Portland area as well, too, so appreciate your work on that. Thank you to this panel. Thank you, Mr. Kendall. We are joined by Representative Holvey. Representative, would you care to come up? And why don't we also bring up Frank Vignola as well, too, if he's here.
Good afternoon, Chair Bailey, committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you about this Senate Bill 1578A. I haven't actually looked at the Dash 9 amendments yet, but I did want to provide you a little bit of background on this particular part of statute and its origin and some of the issues I'm concerned about with this bill. In I think it was 2007 I introduced and it was passed House Bill 2620, which basically implemented 279C527, which was solely about solar energy at the time and was really meant to provide a platform for the solar energy industry in Oregon and to provide some sort of market and to attract the solar industry into the state. I do have concerns about the impact of adding woody biomass to this, the impact of the solar industry, and the impact of this specific program. I do support the use of woody biomass. I'm just not sure this is the right application or program to accomplish that, and I'll maybe explain a little bit about that. I want to just read you an excerpt from testimony from 2007 on why this bill moved forward from my testimony. As the cost of fuel and electricity soars, the growth of the solar industry, an industry which operates on fuel that is effectively free, becomes increasingly attractive. The volatility of the current energy market highlights the need for a source of consistently priced energy. So, solar energy is readily available when the demand is greatest, on hot summer afternoons when utilities have trouble meeting the demand. Every region in Oregon, from the high desert of central Oregon to the north coast, has the potential to supplement our regional energy needs with solar energy by benefiting the grid with a diverse source of electric generation. Solar energy ensures less air pollution, reducing emissions that harm the environment. For public buildings, energy-saving solar techniques will pay back the taxpayer for the life of the building and reduced energy cost. Solar energy contributes substantially to economic development in Oregon, providing much-needed jobs for our state. Each megawatt of solar power supports new jobs in system design, distribution, installation, and service, while at the same time promoting the entire solar energy industry. It is hoped that the increased demand for photovoltaic cells might encourage PV manufacturing in this state, which is linked to our high-tech cluster by the use of lower-quality silicon wafers. That was the initial reason for this bill, and subsequently to that, we did attract Solar World to this state, who actually testified in favor of this bill, saying that Oregon, with this kind of policy, is helping produce a market that we can expand with, and what will help us stay in Oregon. So, from that perspective, I worry about the impact. I know that woody biomass can create jobs and does, and I totally support the idea of getting some of that woody biomass out of our forests and utilizing it. I just don't want to see it happen at the expense of the jobs in the solar industry. And that's the fear that I have with this particular legislation. In 2012, after a couple of years with Senator Whitsitt, going back and forth, we were discussing why couldn't geothermal be used in this, and it actually is a pretty good comparison to solar, as far as it doesn't create emissions and relatively clean. This wasn't about renewable energies. This was about a clean emission-free energy source that would help us meet our renewable goals as well as being emission-free and trying to spur new industry. So though I think the biomass industry does need to expand, I don't think this is the right pathway to do it statewide. And one of the reasons for that is, we have great concerns in many of our regions with non-attainment areas for air quality. I will, you know, I know architects like to talk about doing this in urban areas, but I will mention that in some of our largest areas, Portland, Eugene, we have non-attainment issues with our the Clean Air Act, which causes a whole other series of issues. So if you were to multiply, you know, our public buildings to start implementing biomass boilers in the Willamette Valley, which is an airshed that suffers in many areas with potential non-attainment, you're pushing on that ceiling of non-attainment, which would impact our ability to site new industries that do have emissions. You know, perhaps this makes sense in some of our more rural areas where we don't have those issues and they're closer to the fuel source, but I'm not sure that this is a good idea for the whole state geographically. So I really think we should think about, you know, some geographic restrictions if this were to go forward. And you know, that's you know, one of the big concerns. And you know, the original concept of this bill was emission free. It was a free source of energy, and you know, was going to help an industry cluster. And I would really hate to see us cut that industry off at the knees at this point by putting this competition into that arena. I think there's other ways to incent woody biomass. You know, I realize that the carbon issues around woody biomass, you know, in some instances make good sense. Getting some of this decaying debris out of our forests makes sense. And finding a market and being able to do that, I think, makes sense too. But I don't think this is the right program for that. And that's my testimony, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Questions for the representative? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Holley, for your testimony and for your bringing the bill initially, without which we wouldn't be here today. Do you by any chance, or maybe staff has the amount of this 1.5% amount runs up each year? Do we have a number of the type of dollars we're talking there that this generates?
Representative Benz, I don't have that number off the top of my head. I'm sure the Department of Energy might have a better handle on that. I will say that I wasn't aware of this bill on the Senate side until somebody told me they were having a hearing on it that day. And so I was caught a little bit off guard that this issue was coming back after we dealt with it in 2012 for geothermal. So I do know that, you know, the Department of Energy probably has a closer idea, but I do want to dispel something that I did hear about, you know, the bill's designed to allow the contracting agency to essentially say this is not appropriate, you know, a use for this particular building, or basically we don't want to use it on this building. The comments that were made were saying, oh, we have these reserve funds, you know, set aside, you know, because the bill allows you to declare it inappropriate, but it also requires that if you do, you have to keep track of that 1.5% amount for that project and roll it forward to a future project, which would then, you know, compound essentially, so you would have a little bit larger investment on a different project perhaps. So that amount would come out of that new bonded construction amount. It's not like there's a reserve fund set aside that's, you know, they're having to sit on and wait until they, you know, feel like they have to use it. So it was meant to give flexibility to the cities. I don't know what that compounded amount was. I know the Department of Energy was supposed to give us reports in 2009 and 2011 as per the original legislation. I never saw those reports. I'm not sure they actually exist, and I'm not sure where the Department of Energy is at being able to deliver a report on that, but I'll bet you they have that information. There's a long answer, but it didn't give you an answer.
That's fine. It seems to me that I'm sure you're not going to try to take all the credit for the driving down of the cost of solar panels from this bill. But
oh, if you'd like to give it to me.
Go right ahead. I'm happy for you to take it. I think the fact of the matter is, though, that solar has become a lot more prevalent than was the case those years ago when you brought this bill.
Mm-hmm.
And so in one sense, it's succeeded along with other things happening. But if the underlying goal was to create clean energy, the reason for clean energy, of course, is to make sure that we have less carbon in the air. And the biomass situation we have with our forests does just that. And I want to make I've made this point many times in my discussions across Eastern Oregon.
I don't disagree with you.
Right. And so the question would be, which does the better job? Because if indeed we can draw more woody biomass out of the forest, and thus the forest does a better job capturing carbon, maybe a far more efficient way of accomplishing what you originally intended. And because your intent, of course, wasn't to get solar panels on everybody's roof just because they reflect, I'm not sure what, but your intent was to drive down carbon in the atmosphere, I'm guessing. Clean energy, that's what that means. And so my point is, if indeed this does a better job by getting biomass out of the forest, would you say, well, maybe it's time to take the vehicle you created and allow its focus to move to something that does a better job of accomplishing what you originally intended?
My answer would be no to that. I agree with many pieces of what you've said, but it's not just about CO2. We have issues with particulate matter in the state as well. And, you know, recognizing when we have forest fires, there's a lot of particulate matter goes up in the air. You know, it's generally lasts for a few weeks. I hate it when it lasts, you know, a month or something like that in a year. But when you're talking about that as opposed to having emissions continually every day of the year going up into the air, and especially in our non-attainment areas, you know, I think you're really pushing the limit of what our airshed can handle in terms of future economic development. I'm just saying I don't think this is a good program or policy for the statewide.
Thank you.
Representative Weider.
Can Representative Holvey, you kind of prompted me there. I was thinking I wouldn't even ask you a question. And
I was hoping you wouldn't.
You know, letting you go peacefully, which we still can, but my concern is, I mean, we're sitting here talking about it going continuously, but these woody biomass production centers burn it very efficiently, and lots of them have scrubber fans that sit on the other side that are keeping the emissions from hitting the air. And, I mean, I have lots of friends in Central Oregon, and it kind of stinks going over there in the summertime after a forest fire is gone, and it just sits right there in the valley, or it comes over here and sits in the valley. And even with your field burning piece, I mean, the forest fires are almost worse than the field burning lots of times, because field burning they'd control when there's an uprise, and forest fires, we can't control that. And
if field burning is not germane to this bill.
Yeah. But, I mean, same principle we have, we're looking at when we can control that, but the fires we can't, and it'll sit in the valley for a long time. And I think we do a lot more damage by having the forest fires, and if we can mitigate those with this bill, isn't that a positive thing for us?
Well, if we could reduce the amount of forest fires, obviously that would be a plus, you know, for our air quality, you know. But the idea that forest fires and the resulting non-attainment that happens from that being counted against us in our air, you know, in our overall airshed quality issues when the EPA decides to cite us that we're in violation of the Clean Air Act, does not come into play. What would come into play, though, is if we had emission producing the electric generation throughout the valley, and it was causing us to reach that non-attainment area. I think that is considered differently, and because we are causing it. So, you know, I just argue that this is not. The applicability of this in what I would consider endangered airsheds is probably not the best idea. I mean, I can see this might work on the coast. It might work in Eastern Oregon, some other areas where you know, we don't have quite those issues. But, you know, I just don't, I mean, my position is I don't think this is right. And I don't understand why they can't, come up with their own program instead of doing this at the expense of the solar industry. And this program was originally designed to help the solar industry get a foothold and get established and be sustainable in Oregon. And I think this particular legislation endangers that. So come up with a woody biomass program that that makes sense and doesn't take away from other industries, and I'd be happy to support that. I think there was one no vote on the Senate side Senator Edwards basically kind of said the same thing, and I can't think of anybody that's more supportive of the wood products industry and woody biomass than Senator Edwards. But he also understood, because he was there in this debate, what this bill was about.
Okay. Vice Chair Johnson.
Thank you. Oh, geez, you guys are
brutal. This is fun. We've been on the receiving end a long time, believe me. No.
I would point out that we do have several people that have traveled to be here for this.
Okay. Representative, again, I share your concern for anything we would do that would create disincentives for the development of additional renewables, as you talk about for solar and so forth. But, you know, I guess I would keep in mind we have many other ways we create incentives for solar and for other green technology. You know,
as we do with biomass.
Correct. As we've got the Energy Trust, we've got our tax credits and so forth. To the point, if there was any sort of dilution of this amount, it's just hard for me to see that this would be the death knell of solar in Oregon. But beyond that, I guess, to get into your question about air quality and stuff, I just don't see the original bill as it was laid out taking into account anything other than the fact that green energy technology means a system that employs solar or geothermal energy directly for space, water, heating, or electricity generation and so forth. Then it goes on to say, building design that utilizes solar passive energy to reduce energy use from other sources. You know, that was the core intent of the bill, and it's just hard for me to see how adding woody biomass is in violation to that. I think it's just an expansion of that into areas that I really think get at the heart of what the relating to clause was in the bill here, the bill for an act relating to the facilitation of economic development and creating new provisions. And as we talk about woody biomass, the amount of jobs that are created exponentially from that product seem to me to be massive across the state. If you talk about the harvesting of the product, the transportation, the manufacturing, the so forth and so on, it's just an exponential process. So I don't really have a question in there. I'm just responding back to some of the comments that you made.
Well, I guess my response would be is that's why I opened up with the testimony that was in place when this originally was put in place, and it was about concern about emissions and the ability to have a free source, energy source, as well, and it was a supplement. It was a start of something that was a program designed to help that specific industry, and so I just have concern that the legislation before you is going to negatively impact what has been built up in this program and this industry. I support the use of woody biomass, but I just don't think it's applicable everywhere in the state because of our air quality. Sure, they're relatively clean emissions, as you've probably heard, and the CO2 exchange of the forest makes some of this attractive, but the reality is they still have emissions. And, not just CO2, but particulate matter. And, biomass sometimes has a lot of, other types of ingredients in it, that don't burn as clean. We got scrubbers to clean it up, but you still end up with particulate matter emissions. So, that's why I laid out the testimony from that bill and the purpose for this original piece of legislation.
Okay, thank you, Representative. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Appreciate it. Mr. Vignola, please.
Thank you, Representative Chair Bailey and panel, for hearing me today. I just found out about this legislation yesterday and today.
If you could identify yourself for the record, please.
I'm Frank Mignola. I'm director of the University of Oregon Solar Radiation Monitoring Lab and an early supporter of the legislation for 1.5% for solar.
Thank you.
And I'm also a member of the Oregon Solar Energy Industries Association. We're having a meeting up in Hillsboro today, our annual meeting, so not many people should come to this. I was asked to come down here and let you know that I have people, about 30 people, companies oppose this legislation because of what it will do to the solar industry. Now, it does have, now I have nothing against biomass. Some people do, but I think that it doesn't need this incentive to be, I don't see the rationale behind why this incentive has to be applied to biomass. You should always put these facilities, biomass jet things in new buildings. Solar does cost more, and if this legislation goes through, there's going to be considerably less solar installed in these buildings. And this happened with the business energy tax credits when solar started to compete with biomass. Biomass basically took over any solar projects. These people think they will be affected by this legislation, and I'll give a copy of this afterwards. As I say, I was just up at the meeting. They asked me to come down here and speak to you. And if I'd be glad to answer any questions. But I do know that this legislation helped some of the companies survive when the energy tax credits went away. Those especially who are doing commercial installations.
We appreciate your coming down on short notice and missing your meeting to be here, so thank you. Questions for this witness, please? Seeing none, thank you for your time. We appreciate it. And if you don't mind, that list of signatures that you have, if you could leave that with the committee administrator, that would be fantastic.
Okay.
Thank you. Call up Phil Chang, please, Jeff Bissonette, and Bill Cluding. Mr. Chang, please.
Chair Bailey and members of the committee, thank you very much for this opportunity to come here today and voice support for SB 1578 as amended. My name is Phil Chang. I work for the Central Oregon Intergovernmental Council, so I work for the 3 counties and 8 cities in the Central Oregon region. And I'd like to provide testimony on behalf of COIC today, but I also wanted to call attention to the testimony, the sign-on letter that we submitted last night as a coalition in support of 1578. When we submitted it last night, it had about 16 sign-ons, and now we're at about 20. And I'd really quickly like to, just for the record, read off some of the organizations that support this, because it's a pretty there's some really neat breadth to it. Deschutes County, the Central Oregon Intergovernmental Council, the Lake County Resources Initiative, Wisewood, Sustainable Northwest, Wallawa Resources, Amoresco, Crook County, Bear Mountain Forest Products, Ochko Lumber and Malheur Lumber, the Association of Oregon Counties, the League of Oregon Cities, Neil Kelly Incorporated, the Nature Conservancy, Interfor US Incorporated, and the City of Oak Ridge, the City of Prineville, Southern Oregon University, the Southern Oregon Clean Energy Alliance, and I have a couple of individual electeds, the Mayor Pro Tem of Bend, Jody Barham, and Bend City Councilor Sally Russell, who have signed on to this letter as well. And we will submit a updated copy with those additional sign-ins that came in today later on. So on behalf of COIC, my organization, you've heard a lot already about how these projects help to restore forests and can save us money and create jobs, and that they're good energy projects. We do have 20 of these projects around the state, but I'd like to say it was not an easy task to get these projects built. They save public entities money over the long term, but you need to get past the first cost of installing these projects. Just like any renewables, you have to get past the first cost of installation to realize the cost savings in the long run. So in that kind of realm of renewable opportunities and choices, the 1.5% requirement as it currently exists, is a barrier, and is a barrier to development of biomass projects, and is inhibiting us. And I'd like to give a couple of specific examples from my experience promoting biomass energy projects in Central Oregon. And if I could just step back for one moment, I'd like to say I backed into biomass energy work through forests. One of my jobs is to staff our forest restoration collaboratives in Central Oregon, groups that are bringing together old enemies to try to put differences to rest, come to new agreements, heal our forests, and undo 100 years of damage from past management and fire suppression. And biomass is an incredible opportunity to move some of this material out of the forest that's so expensive for us to dispose of, and in so doing, get more acres treated and make more acres of forest healthy. So we have been trying to promote biomass energy systems for a few years, and a couple of specific examples I'd like to mention are the Central Oregon Community College, the Deschutes County Sheriff's Office, and the Bend Lapine and Crook County School Districts. These three entities we have approached about biomass energy systems in the past, and when they were ready to build new buildings, and describe the benefits to them, and as community members, these people were all very excited about the potential for helping our forests, creating green energy jobs in our communities. But what they said to us was, well, we're required to spend 1.5% of our budget on green energy technologies. At solar, between 2007 and 2012, was the only eligible technology. So they were going to build a solar project. And because they were dedicating 1.5% of their budget already to a solar energy installation, they could not afford to consider an additional renewable energy project. So we're not talking about some of the previous speakers mentioned that they supported biomass, but not at the expense of solar. We have been at a competitive disadvantage for a number of years that has been inhibiting the development of biomass energy projects that can benefit our communities, and we're seeking a level playing field. I wanted to say a bunch of things about the emissions questions, but I probably have used my time up. I'd be happy to speak to some of the concerns about non-attainment areas and the cleanliness of this technology and pollution control, if you'd like to ask.
I suspect we may have some questions on that, but let's take the rest of the testimony first. Mr. Kluge.
Thank you, Chair Bailey, Vice Chair of the Committee. For the record, Bill Footing, Carpenters Industrial Council. I guess my organization supports 1578, what's left of it. I handed this handout, the question come up about biomass, how much, where at. Remember, the dark green is 1 million tons of bone dry biomass. We've tried for years to put biomass at the forefront for forest health, clean air, and jobs. And again, my opinion, for some reason we keep striking out. Rural Oregon is at a low point, and nobody can find the light in the tunnel to bring rural Oregon back on its feet. We thought we had cogeneration plants that could have solved a few problems, 10, 15 megawatt, scrubbers, clean air, 70, 80 jobs on each facility, 365 days a year. We struck out. We have mills down right now that need a break. They need help. You heard mention of the clean air problem in certain areas. You can go to the DEQ office, and after the field burnings was shut off, DEQ received over 100 calls from the southern part of the Willamette Valley about somebody burning fields. And what that was, it was an immense forest fire in Southern California. That's how much a forest fire can pollute our air. Someday, I hope you folks someday can come up with a plan to help clean up our forests, keep what fill mills we got left going, and create the jobs. I have documentation on just how much carbon, other poisonous emissions go in the air from forest fires. If you don't have that, I can get it to you. But this right here shows you just the state that Oregon's in. I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clooney. Mr. Bissonnette.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jeff Bissonnette with the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. And if you read the sign-in sheet, I signed in as neither supportive nor opposed because I just wanted to...
Nor neutral, I might add.
Nor neutral. I didn't know what to...
A lot of confusion going up on up there, huh, Jeff?
Not a line item for raising questions. And as somebody who's worked with this policy since 2007, I just wanted to raise some, especially with my experience in 2012, where we tried in a very limited way to do geothermal that everybody supported, everybody knew what we were trying to do, and frankly, we sort of made a hash of it in 2012 and determined that we didn't have what we needed because we didn't really take the time that we needed in a short session and had to come back last year and fix it. And so as I look at this at this bill and this debate, it's very compelling. Actually, Mr. Clooney and I are in agreement where if you want to bring rural Oregon back on its feet, and I think everybody wants that, with energy and with forest health and with economic development, there's no silver bullet. And somebody wiser than me said that it really requires silver buckshot. And the irony here is that the buckshot includes both solar and biomass. Mr. Clooney also said we need to come up with a plan, and create jobs. And I was like, yep, but first of the part is coming up with a plan rather than kind of the, sort of piecemeal approach that we're taking. And I think that the thing that bothers me about this bill, not about biomass, is it is really a piecemeal approach. Representative Benz asked how much of the 1.5% is available. I don't know offhand, but it's a finite amount, and I think it's a policy question of how we want to use those resources. Do we want to help solar? Do we want to help biomass? Do we want to do both? How are we doing that? And right now, I don't know that question, and I've been working with this policy for a while. Is it time, again, to answer one of Representative Benz's question before? My answer is maybe. But what's the policy goal and what's the best way to accomplish that? We're talking about energy. We're also talking about forest health. How are we applying these resources? One of the things to look at specifically about the bill is the comparison of costs of constructing green technology that employs, and this is new language, a particular technology with the corresponding cost of green energy technology that implies the same technology at a location away. Well, I don't know exactly how to handle that, frankly, because that original language was having solar in comparison with geothermal, because geothermal, unless you hit a site just right, you're probably going to be building a geothermal facility away from the facility that would be taking advantage of the geothermal energy. And so we wanted to make sure that as we recognize that reality for geothermal, that we didn't disadvantage solar, and so can look and say, okay, does solar make sense on the building, or does it make sense at a very near site that is not necessarily on the building, which was the requirement in the original law? How this is used, I'm not exactly sure, because, again, we're not just comparing solar and geothermal. We're now doing solar and geothermal and biomass. And then you change the definition of biomass with the Dash 9 amendment, with woody biomass as a fuel for space and or water, or space or water heating. With the risk of perhaps breaching protocol, I think the chair asked one of the sponsors earlier, does that include CHP, which is combined heat and power? I think the answer is yes, as I did that. Well, that's fine, but it's combined heat and power. So combined heat can fit in under this, but the power, what do we do if electrons are coming off of water biomass? It's not being considered here under the 1.5%. So I guess the main thrust of my point is to say I think we all want the same thing. I think we want to use our resources to meet a bunch of different policy goals. I just think we need to make sure that we're doing this in a way that makes sense, where everybody's clear what we're trying to do, and we want to make sure that that it works, because if we're not careful, we're going to be right back here again in 2015 cleaning up the mistakes that we didn't have time to address here. So take that for what it's worth, but again, it's not so much for or against biomass. I'm very much for biomass, but just in terms of developing the policy, there hasn't been a lot of broad conversation about this, and I feel we may be headed to some choppy waters in rulemaking, but if the legislature deems it the time to pass this plan, we'll figure out and see if I'm wrong. I appreciate the time.
Wouldn't be the first time we've launched a boat into stormy seas.
I didn't even want to go to our wave technology.
Mr. Chang, I'd just be curious to take you up on your offer to talk a little bit more about the emissions profile from biomass thermal. Could you describe that a little bit, please?
Yes. As you heard from Andrew, these biomass boiler systems are highly efficient. And if you have a highly efficient system, it usually means that you have very complete combustion. And if you have very complete combustion, it means that there's not a whole lot that comes out the exhaust system. We also have exhaust pollution control systems that can be installed with these biomass energy systems that would, further clean up the air. But Representative Holtby particularly expressed concern about air quality non-attainment areas, and I wanted to comment that we actually have some of these projects that have been built. Some of the 20 projects that exist currently are actually in non-attainment areas. Oak Ridge is a really good example that's not too far away from here. The Oak Ridge Elementary School, that is a non-attainment area. They have inversions, DEQ had no problems, no concerns whatsoever about permitting, or approving that project. And I took back the word permitting because generally, so DEQ has reviewed this, the policy proposal that's in front of you, and has no concerns about it. And as a general rule, DEQ looks at these small-scale biomass thermal energy systems in public buildings as so small and so clean that they do not require permits. They want to get a notice of construction, but they are, these projects are clean enough that they do not find them to be any kind of a public health risk in terms of emissions. So I would just say that in terms of the actual data, it's a non-issue. And I would also say in a context like Central Oregon, as you've heard, we are doing all this forest restoration work, and you can take out some saw log material, you can take out some material to be made into paper chips and things like that, but there's a lot of biomass left, and we burn that material smoldering piles in the middle of spring and in the fall. And so if you could divert some of that material from those smoldering piles and instead burn them in high-efficiency controlled combustion systems, the net air quality effect would be a benefit. And then if you think of that from a carbon perspective, if you are taking something that you're burning already and putting that, using that for energy production and then leaving fossil fuel, natural gas, heating oil, propane in the ground, there's a carbon benefit to leaving that stored inert fossil carbon in the ground. So there's a lot more ways you can think about forests and air quality and carbon emissions, but that's at least a few of them.
Thank you.
That's great.
Any additional questions for this panel? We do have two more folks to get in before the end of the committee. Representative Whitsitt.
I just wanted to address Mr. Kluding and thank him for his information. In my district, we have 350,000 acres of standing dead, completely dead forest, and it's called the Red Zone down in Klamath and Lake County. We can't do anything with the trees. The needles have gone. I mean, it's standing there, and it is one match away from a massive conflagration that we've heard testimony on that once it goes, it can't be stopped. And we sit for months at a time down in southern Oregon with just small forest fires under the smoke of those, and I cannot imagine what's going to happen when this thing goes, and we can't touch it. And it would be very nice to be able to cut this down, use it before it goes up, and we have smoke all over the state of Oregon and California and Nevada, anyhow.
Thank you for that point, Representative. If I may, for an example, Lakeview, the foundation was poured. Governor Kulongoski went down and praised the work that has been done. For years, they put the plan together for a cogeneration plant would feed the mill, dry their lumber. And like I say, the foundation got poured, and there it sits. And as the representative spoke, there's thousands of tons of bone-dry material that we could be using today.
Thank you. Representative Reagan.
Oh, just real quick question. I had no questions when I got here. I thought it was a fine idea that we should use up the biomass. But Jeff's question or Jeff's comments and your questions made me think, is there any strategy to ship a bunch of this excess biomass to Boardman, for example, that instead of growing plants in that area? Is anybody talking about that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Reardon, I don't know specifically. I know that PGE is looking at biomass as a potential source material for a new generation facility there. I do know they're also doing a lot of experimentation with growing feedstock and there was a question earlier about torrefaction and building torrefaction facilities. To what extent that's being compared, you know, the cost of that is being compared to the cost of ongoing shipment and that sort of thing biomass from other parts of the state, I don't know. But, you know, biomass is in the thinking and you know, biomass is a recognized renewable resource under the RPS. There was actually even a clarification in 2009 or probably 2011 that said, you know, if this type of plant did come online, you know, even if though it's using the bones of a previously non-qualified resource, that it would still qualify under the RPS.
So, I'm going to cut short this discussion because it's not germane to this bill, and we have people that we need to get in. So thank you. Any further questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate this. I'd like to call up Mark Nystrom, please. Commissioner Tony DeBone. Link, is that you signing up over there?
Yes, sir.
You going to make it short?
Come on up.
Chair Bailey, members of the committee, I'm Mark Nystrom. I'm a policy manager for the Association of Oregon Counties. AOC supports this bill with the Dash 9 amendments. We feel it provides more choices for counties. It can potentially create green jobs, and it's good for the environment. I'd like to thank the leadership of Senator Knope on this, and especially Deschutes County Commissioner Tony DeBone. Commissioner DeBone was one of the folks that brought this bill to the attention of Senator Knope, and I'd like to introduce him now as your next speaker.
Great. Thank you very much.
Making the trip.
Thank you much, Chair Bailey and members of the committee. I was on a different call for a while. I haven't heard the testimony today.
If you could introduce yourself for the record.
Tony DeBone, Deschutes County Commissioner.
Thank you.
The Deschutes County Board of County Commissioners did provide a letter of support in the Senate, so we didn't get that into this hearing today, but it is on record, so we do officially support this. One note I wanted to say is, you know, Phil Chang and I have worked together. He just spoke previously, and we've kind of debated these things over the years, but he knows his stuff. He's really deep into this, and I really respect his opinion on this. So I was able to bring it to our senator. We got this started in this short session. This has been discussed in the past, so you know I'm excited that this has support all around the state, it looks like, and we're really you know, having a good discussion today. Just jobs. You know, I do live in the Lapine area. Senator Whitsitt is my senator. We have mountains of chip logs that come through, and they are chipped. There's about 40-yard semis that leave town in the summertime, and this will provide a floor to that market. Sometimes the cost of diesel relative to those chips just falls apart, and they just sit. So this is one of the real tangible things I can say in my area. Also, we do have air quality warnings in the summertime or the spring and the fall when those piles are getting burned. So we've got pristine, wonderful conditions. They got all smoky in when those piles burn. So, you know, the CO2 discussion is valuable, but it goes up one way or another. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Cannon.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Link Cannon. I'm Director of Forest Resources and Taxation for the Oregon Forest Industries Council. I do not have written testimony, and I think everything has been adequately covered in terms of issues. I hadn't planned to testify, but the advantage of leaving it till the last minute is you get the last word, so I kind of thought that would be nice. And this particular bill, you know, you've heard a lot of, I don't know if I'd call it white noise, but a lot of concerns, as you do with all the legislation you hear, a lot of differing viewpoints about what may or may be wrong with this with any piece of legislation. And at the end of the day, this bill is just about choice. It's about giving communities a choice. It's not a mandate. It's not a requirement to use anything. It's a choice to use the resources, the green resources that are available to them in a way that makes the most sense for them, given the money they've got to spend. So it, I don't, it, it's made more complicated than it really is. And if there are objections to that, then, you know, that's something worth talking about. The other thing I guess I'd say, I'd leave you with this as you deliberate on this bill, is it's an important bill, but it's not an end-all and be-all. You've heard Mr. Kluding, of course, Representative Bentz and others have talked about the magnitude of the problem, and this is a very small, significant piece of addressing it, but I think and I hope going forward that we can continue to have this discussion with your committee and others and try and come up with a more comprehensive solution, particularly to, in eastern Oregon, but in southern Oregon as well and elsewhere, where we have these tremendous forest health problems and we have this tremendous resource that's going to go up in smoke, and see if we can't figure out how to do something about that to make sense for the state and the forests and the win for everybody. So I look forward to continuing that discussion and hope to be back. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not really a question, but I think I'm getting a sense of deja vu all over again. Some years ago when we were talking about biomass, and I had a couple of constituents who were just starting up companies, and one of them's down a little bit, and I'm thinking this might be something hopeful. And having just, I had to leave earlier this committee to testify on another bill where I'm kind of, you know, being Swedish, we're, and, you know, relatives in the Midwest and all that, and whenever you go to Sweden, it's a potluck, and you bring something. And just, I look at it, this is a big potluck, this renewable energy stuff, and this is like another side dish. So, that you weren't expecting that one.
and we all ruminate on that one.
Yeah.
For a moment.
Mr. Chair, if I might to follow on Representative Boone's comment, just for
please.
The information.
I was hoping not.
Are you going to argue that it's a main course? Because I don't really.
No, but Norwegian. This is a statistic that is Sweden actually their energy from biomass actually surpassed their energy use from oil about 4 years ago. So in Sweden, biomass is actually a more utilized energy resource than oil. Mm-hmm. You know, in Scandinavia, it's much more advanced than it is here, I think, and that's something to look at as we go forward.
They're burning lutefisk. Thank you.
Okay. We were baiting you.
Seeing no further questions, thank you very much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 1578? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1578, open a work session on Senate Bill 1578. Colleagues, I'll state my opinion on the record here, and we can see what the...
Can you make it short, Mr. Chair?
I will make it short. Actually, I'm gonna talk about Thanksgiving is what I'm going to
okay.
do. One of the things I've been thankful for during some of my time in the legislature is not having to serve on the healthcare committee, if for no other reason than I hate getting into scope of practice fights. In some ways, this seems a little bit like an energy version of a scope of practice fight. I strongly support solar energy, and I think it's important that we have buildings that contain solar energy. I strongly support biomass energy, and I think it's important that we expand our biomass industry. I think this bill brings up some extremely important concepts, and I am impressed by the coalition that has come together to support this bill and the people that are behind it. I think that is unusual, and I think folks who have been on this committee for a while would attest to that. That said, I do think some important questions have been raised, and I have learned the hard way from the previous session in which we did pass the geothermal bill very quickly and at the last minute in a short session, that can lead sometimes to destabilizing outcomes if we don't make sure that we cross all our T's and dot all our I's. So I would like to leave some time to be able to make sure that we are doing that. Unfortunately, we are running out of time in this session to do it. So my hope would be that perhaps we could adopt the amendment and move this bill with recommendation for passage to the Rules Committee, where we could continue to make sure that we've got this right and then go from there. So that would be my preference, and I'd entertain a motion.
Chair Bailey, I move to adopt the Dash 9 amendments to Senate Bill 1578, dated 2/20/2014.
Vice Chair Johnson moves to adopt the Dash A9 amendments to Senate Bill 1578, dated 2/20/2014. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, is there any objection on the amendment? Seeing none, motion carries. Vice Chair Johnson.
Mr. Chair, before we do this, could I have a meeting with my caucus members, please?
Yes, please. Committee will stand at ease.
Thank you. Vice Chair Boone.
Chair Bailey, I move to adopt the Dash 9 amendments.
We have adopted the amendments. We are down to...
Oh, we are down. That's
bill
right.
Itself.
Move that we are amended. Sorry. I move to move Senate Bill 1578 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the House Committee on Rules.
Vice Chair Boone moves Senate Bill 1578 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the House Committee on Rules. Is there any discussion? Vice Chair Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Heartily support the bill. I think it's a great bill. We've heard outstanding testimony today, and it's really hard to determine a useful purpose for sending this bill to rules at this point. So I'll be no, but I support the bill.
Great. Representative Whitener.
Mr. Chair, I'm with Vice Chair Johnson 100% on this. I think there's no reason for it to go to rules. I worry about games being played with this bill, and I would like to see us move it straight to the floor.
Representative
Benz. Mr. Chair, I'll be a no also, but I'm sorry. I'll be a no also. But I must say, I understand the complications that go with a bill of this nature, and I do see some value in sending it to rules. But on the other hand, our situation in my part of the world, as everyone's heard, is desperate. And so I fear that the bill may not emerge from rules, and so that's why I'm going to be a no. But I understand it needs work. So. But I'll be no.
100% with it.
For all of the reasons previously stated, I also will be a no. I think this bill should go directly to the House of Representatives floor for a vote, not to rules.
Thank you. I will say for the record that it is my intention and hope that it comes out of rules, and that that is why the motion, I believe, is where they do pass. But we will move from there. So with seeing that, the clerk will please call the roll.
No.
Representative Beininger?
Aye.
Representative Gurdon?
Aye.
Representative Smith-Hawley?
Excused.
Representative Betty Peterson?
Aye.
Representative Whiting?
No.
Representative Wissett?
No.
Vice Chair Boone?
Aye.
Vice Chair Nelson?
No.
Chair Bates?
Aye. Motion carries. Bill, it's on its way to rules. Thank you very much. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Senate Bill 1578, and the committee is adjourned.
If you look ahead to next week.